It's Rake the Moon episode 14, enjoying uncertainty and anxiety, Milton Keynes raging doom at Cambridge, and Aidan Flint flailing a lot late on. Coming up, we're doing debentures again. Is this a cause for anxiety? It has been for Clem Morfuni, but now he's on the other end. Neil Hutchings from the Supporters Trust is here to kick around charges and general ownership complexity. Plus, four games to go and Swindon are somehow slap bang in the middle of the promotion race. We'll try and explain it. No guarantees that we can, but we're certainly here for it. All that on this week's Rake the Moon. But of course, before Weighty Matters, the banter section, and given I particularly enjoyed the Holman-Drinan goal to clinch victory against Walsall, not for the delivery of 3 points, but also for its level of high comedy value. I was just wondering for the banter section this week, Sam, given we seem to have had a disappointing response to people who put their right-handed footwear on to start with, are there any goals you remember particularly fondly, Swindon-related or others, for their high comedy value?
It's a good question. Yeah, many. I remember some excellent own goals from halfway. I think it was a Leicester player. I can't remember. It was a fullback who scored an own goal from halfway. I think there was an excellent own goal at the weekend from one of the Brighton back four, slicing the ball into his own goal from absolutely for no reason whatsoever. From a Swindon perspective, the ones that come straight to mind are the two that they scored against Notts County in March 2 years ago, I think it would have been. One was a back pass that hit their own post and then bounced out for a tap-in, and one was goalkeeper giving the ball to Paul Glatzel when no one else was anywhere near him and able to chip over. But, God, there's so many down the years that you can remember and have a bit of a giggle. At least in time, you can have a bit of a giggle, I'm sure, in the moment. Particularly the ones that Swindon conceded, it wasn't so great. Not a goal, but I remember Ian Culverhouse getting sent off within a minute at Everton in an FA Cup third round game.
Yes, never handball.
That was my first away game as a fan. I got that ticket as a Christmas present from my dad, and I was so excited to go. And we went up on the coach and I was so thrilled. And then we sit down and they're down to 10 men and a goal down within 3 minutes. And I just started crying in the stand. I thought, why do we do this? Why do we go away? But I guess having been in dozens and dozens of away games since, you kind of didn't put me off. But that's the sort of thing you can laugh at later on, but is not so funny in the moment. But football is all made for gallows humour, isn't it? So these things should be dealt with as much humour as we can.
Yeah, if you can survive Ian Culverhouse getting sent off a handball inside 60 seconds and still want to go back, there probably is hope for you yet. I did enjoy a long time ago, because I feel obliged to go stock in trade to the 90s, it felt like a full-length diving header from David Holdsworth. To give Swindon the goal and ultimately a win against Sheffield United. So there we are. These moments must be treasured and they must be savoured before we dig into far more serious affairs. But let's kick off the serious stuff with a conversation prompted by an email from Companies House on Friday detailing registration of charge 00053100047. What is all this about is a very reasonable question to ask. Well, there does appear to be a debenture now registered against Swindon Town Football Company Limited, with consequences inevitably, of course, for the finest football team in Wiltshire. Trust SDFC's Neil Hutchings is with Sam and myself, having discussed this with Chief Executive Anthony Hall in person. Thank you, Neil, for taking time out to speak to us from your busy rest of life schedule.
You're very welcome. It's great to be here.
So where is best to start? Shall we possibly go through the simplest idea maybe of explaining what our good friend Charge 00, etc. is in fact all about?
So I think many people will be aware that the club announced a restructuring of the ownership structure of the club last week. And the club were good enough to give us the heads up on that a couple of days before we went public and explained how two of the middle holding companies, Seabeck and Swinton Reds, had been removed from the structure and simplified it so that Access Football Investments, which is Clemore Fooney's UK holding company in for his football activities, now owns 100% of the football club. What we weren't aware of until that email from Companies House arrived on Friday morning was that at the same time that that restructuring took place, the debenture that you referred to there was issued between one of Clemore Fooney's Australian plumbing companies and the football club. So for those who don't really understand what a debenture is, it's a bit like a mortgage over a house. So if you borrow money from a bank or a building society, they'll happily lend you the cash, but in return they'll put a charge over your property. So if you ran off and never repaid the debt, then they can take control of your property, resell it, and recover the money to pay off the debt. So a debenture is very similar, that the Access Plumbing Company, which is 100% owned by Clemore Fooney, is what, as far as we're aware, is now lending money into Swindon Town Football Club, and in return to secure that money, there is a charge over the club that in the event that the money is not repaid, then the Access Plumbing Company has the right to take over the club and sell its assets to settle the debt. So that got announced on Friday morning. We weren't aware of that. We contacted the club over the weekend and I met with Anthony Hoare on Easter Monday to go through that and the ramifications of it.
So a question possibly for you and Sam here. In terms of how the club's been funded, we think it's sort of loans, isn't it? Or it has been loans up until now, Sam, with no interest on, if I remember rightly.
Well, that's what's been publicly stated. It's directors' loans, so into a directors' loans account. And the most recently published number for that was the 10.6 million against it for the accounts ending in May 2025, almost the wrong year, May 2025. So we've had nearly a year since. So I don't know, Neil, what are we thinking? It must be 12 and a half million that is likely against that loan account now.
Yeah, I think that's a fair guess. Whenever we talk to the club about it, it feels like there's around 150 to 200,000 a month going into the club to pay salaries and wages and bills and things like that. So a 12 to 12 and a half million number today doesn't seem out of the ballpark.
I suppose the question that comes to mind for me possibly, Neil, from the conversations you had with Anthony Hoare, is this some broader implication of a change in the way the club is funded rather than at least having those kind of loans without the immediate prospect of a sort of charge on the ground that you've talked about? I don't know how either of you feel about that as a concept or something worth investigating.
So I think there's two parts to that. In terms of where the money's coming from, although the club have gone to some lengths in the past, particularly at the advisory board, saying that there was no funding and no links between Clemore Fooney's other activities and the football club, I think there's now a recognition by the club that funding has come from other parts of the Access Group into the club, albeit via a director loan, as Sam just mentioned. So the concept of money coming from elsewhere within the more Fooney business structure isn't new. I think it's maybe new in the public domain, but based on what we now understand, that it's not the first time it's happened. I think the securitisation of that lending by debenture is definitely new. And there's two parts to that which concern the trust, and we've been very honest and very direct with Anthony Hoare when we met him on Monday. We have a very good professional relationship that we're able to be honest with each other. We don't always agree with each other, but we always have the opportunity to have the right discussion in the right atmosphere. And so we've shared with him two concerns. I think more specifically with this particular debenture, the way it's drafted does capture a charge over the 50% shareholding they have over the joint venture company that owns the stadium. So they're not trying to put a charge over the property itself, which I've seen reported elsewhere, but the way that the debenture is drafted, and we reviewed all 44 pages over the Easter weekend, it does put a charge over the shares, and we don't think that's correct. We've challenged the club over that. Anthony Hall said on Monday that that wasn't the intent, and if that is the case, they were prepared to amend that. So we've written to them since that meeting on Monday, setting out how we think the drafting does capture the shares, and we're waiting for a response. But Anthony did say that the club would amend the debenture to reflect that. I think the bigger point is here, though, that it's not that long ago we were talking about the Andrew Black debenture of 2.8 million. I think many supporters will be aware how that debenture got passed around 2, 3, 4 times. There's no public record of who holds the debenture at any one time. And because this is a mechanism which allows the holder of the debenture to make a call against the loan, against that debt at any time, and in the event it can't be repaid, has the right to take over the club, to wind it up, to apply for administration. It's a very powerful document to hold. And we were talking about 2.8 million, which Clem Wafuni had to step up and find the money for and pay it off. And he was rightly praised for that when he cleared that debt. The fact we're now introducing a new debenture, albeit for new lending, not historic lending, but it's for new lending, which will grow over time, between a company 100% owned by Clem Wafuni, being Access Plumbing, and another company, Swindon Town Football Club, which is now 100% owned by Clem Wafuni. It makes no sense to us to go to the time, trouble and effort of putting in place a 44-page legal agreement and recreating a potential repeat of what happened previously. The intentions might be sound today, but we saw how the previous debenture got passed around in the years afterwards. So we don't believe that debentures are the right way of securing debt, particularly where Clem owns both parts of the relationship. And that's a wider concern that we have, not just particularly with this debenture, but with any lending that's coming into the football club. It would be better to be done through direct loan accounts or unsecured loans, as has been the case for the last 4 or 5 years. Why now? Why this particular approach? Why this change? Isn't clear, other than the club saying it's the legal advice they've had. They should have done it from the beginning. They haven't, but this is where they are and this is what they're going to do moving forward. And I think that's a bigger concern, that if that debenture gets passed on as it did in the past, then that's where the risk comes from.
Neil, do we think that they would be theoretically able to put historic debt into that debenture? Because at the moment, we're sort of, as far as I can tell, we're taking the sort of club on its word. But is there any mechanism whereby the trust or fans in general can have oversight as to what is involved in that debenture? Or is there potentially a nasty surprise down the line where we could find that there is more than just new debt that is laid against it?
It's a fair question, and it's one that we've written to the club about since Monday. So we've taken Anthony at his word that it is only new debt. I believe the first value that went against the debenture was the March 26 payroll. So I think 200,000 went into the club in March, at the end of March. And I think that's the first value to be protected by the debenture. We've asked if the club can share with us the underlying facility agreement, which isn't in the public domain. The facility agreement sets out how the mechanics of the debenture work, and would also confirm whether it is forward-looking debt or anything historic. So we have asked for a copy of that. As is the case with a lot that we talk to the club about, we do recognise the commercial sensitivity of a lot of this stuff. So we've offered to look at that confidentially, and allowing us to then kind of come back to the supporters to confirm that, yeah, it is either just forward-looking new debt, or if that's not the case, then clearly we can address that. So we have asked to see it. We certainly won't be publishing it if it is shared with us, but it is a question that we've asked just to confirm and give everybody the comfort that it is only new debt.
Was Anthony able to clarify why the club had chosen to seek legal advice on this matter, on the lending matter at this time, you know, after nearly 5 years in charge and at a time after which they've restructured the business to nominally have 100% ownership to Clem Morfuni again, why they chose at this particular point to then bring in a mechanism whereby only new debt would be leveled against it? There are contradictions in here which confuse me a little bit, because if you were going to do that, would you not put the whole lot of debt against it or not do it at all? I'm a bit confused, and I wonder whether you were able to get any clarity in that meeting over that particular point.
It's a question that we put to Anthony over the weekend, for the same reason I've just said, that if Clem Morfuni owns both parts of the relationship here, what does it achieve? What does it create? What does it protect that wasn't protected before? The only clarity we get from the discussions that took place is that the legal advice they received came at the same time as the advice around the restructuring. As you can imagine, if you're undertaking a reorganisation of the corporate structure, you're not going to do that without legal advice. And I believe that the recommendation to put the debenture in place came at the same time that they were discussing the restructuring of the group. We're puzzled as to why the only part of that whole process that's made it to Companies House so far is the debenture, which was released at 9 o'clock on Good Friday. The wider confirmations around the reorganisation, the ownership of the club, hasn't made it to Companies House yet. At least it hadn't yesterday when I last looked. And neither has the appointment of Christian Morfuni as a director, which was announced by the club some weeks ago. That's not on Companies House yet either. So the debenture is in the public domain, but from everything we've talked about, that is the only thing that's actually been recorded at Companies House at this point. When I asked Anthony about that on Monday, he was in contact with the lawyers to find out why, but as of yesterday, the debenture is the only part of all of that to be recorded at Companies House.
Would there be a need for there to be anything recorded at Companies House if they are just eliminating two companies from a chain? Is there actual documentation that would be required for that?
Yes, there's a requirement for Companies House to be updated in terms of changes in share ownership, particularly. There's part of it where you have to record for an individual company who has overall control, and I forget the technical term, but it's something like control and ownership. So currently the football club on Companies House shows that to be, CBEC, if I get this the right way around, which has been the case for many years. I mean, that's not new, it's been like that. I think Clem Morfuni inherited that structure from Lee Power. So as of the last time we checked, Swindon Town, or the football club entity, was still being held by CBEC, as opposed to the what's been announced now, that it should be 100% owned by Access Football Investments. So that's not made it through onto Companies House yet.
And this may require you, Neil, to show your very greatest diplomatic skills, but obviously the Trust has kind of registered its unhappiness at this debenture sort of being tied to the joint venture. You've had issues with the rent being paid as well earlier on. So how do you kind of characterise how the whole joint stadium, you know, 50-50 club, 50-50 trust ownership is going at this point?
So from a corporate governance structure point of view, we continue to have regular joint venture meetings, perhaps not quite as often as we'd like, but they're still happening. The next one has just been scheduled for mid-May when Clem Morfuni is in the country, so that one will be face-to-face. In terms of progress through what we hope to achieve over the last few years, we're now 3 years in, just over. The anniversary was at the end of March. think if you'd asked us back then what we would hope to have achieved by now, I think we all went into the joint venture hoping that we would have our first vote, our first confirmed redevelopment project to go after. And by this stage, if maybe not spades being in the ground, at least we know what that spade looks like, where it's coming from and who was paying for it. We're not there. I think obviously the vote last year was turned down. We didn't reach the 75% threshold that we needed. I think generally speaking, the majority of supporters and members that we talked to were quite impressed by the Don Rogers Stand architect's designs and drawings. It was certainly a bold, well-designed development that focused clearly on hospitality and executive boxes. But there, within it, included improvements to toilet facilities, bars, and food and beverage for general day-to-day supporter opportunities as well. So I think the ambition was good. Clearly, there were issues around confidence in deliverability, funding, the leadership of the club, and all of these things have been talked about at length with all the JV partners over the last 6 to 9 months. I think as we sit here today, the club are working on a master plan that shows their broader vision for what they want to do with the County Ground campus, because it's not only the buildings. The 250-year lease includes the car park, some of the green areas, the little car park at the back of Foundation Park and stuff like that. So they want to come back to the joint venture board with that master plan, with a view of then sharing that with the wider supporter base, and then going into the next kind of effort on a project to redevelop and take that forward. That's all with the club. The role of the JV in all of this is kind of oversight and governance. Under the lease, the club have the right to develop the stadium with our consent. And that's the vote process that we've been through. So we're into the last 2 years of the buyback period, which Swindon Borough Council can step in and buy the ground back from us at any time. We've met with Swindon Borough Council recently. They're very supportive of the joint venture being successful and encouraged us to continue moving forward. But 2 years will soon go by. It's quite amazing how quickly those last 3 years have gone by. So there's a lot to be done in a relatively short space of time. And clearly the focus at the moment is on the end of the season, trying to get promotion, and then we'll then sit down and see where we are.
Can I get some clarity on that buyback agreement or buyback element within the deal, Neil? Because I think it's been understood in different places in different ways. My understanding is that the council could technically have bought it back at any point. Is that right? That it's not specifically this deadline after 3 years?
Yeah, that's correct. So there's a 5-year buyback option within the agreement. And there is an ability to remove it after 3 years if certain criteria had been reached. So planning consent, developed rights, I think a placement of a contract, and maybe the start of some enabling works. So the buyback option has always been there. It's not something that is suddenly there now that wasn't before. I think the important thing is that the council are not showing certainly at this stage, and from the discussions that we've had with the leader of the council, they don't see the benefit to the taxpayers of Swindon to step in and get involved. And that's right, because we continue to work with the club. Sure, there's frustrations on both sides, but we're still working together. It's not like we've spat our dummies out and stormed off because we didn't because the club didn't get the vote that they wanted. There is still an engagement and a willingness to work together. But to get over that 75% threshold, we need to be aligned. And when I say we, I mean the royal we, supporters, members, the local community, everybody needs to buy into whatever it is the club propose. And that wasn't the case before, despite the comprehensive consultation process that we went through, both the survey that the club did and the survey that the trusted. All of the feedback from that survey didn't vary what went to a vote. And I think that was a missed opportunity. And we've said that to the club, that if you go and ask people for their opinion, don't do it just to tick a box. You need to listen to what people are telling you. And we could have maybe had a different outcome if some of that feedback had been taken on board during the consultation periods, because both the survey that the club undertook and the trust undertook came back with the same answers. It wasn't the trust members had a different view on life. At the end of the day, the feedback received pretty much aligned within maybe 2 or 3 percentage points of the final outcome. So we continue to encourage the club to listen to feedback, but more importantly, to act on it. And that's what we're chipping away at the moment.
I want to ask one question, sort of going back a little bit to what we were talking about earlier, but I've been interested personally in the sort of change of corporate behaviour from the current ownership over the last 6 months. Because for 6 months, it was all very much, sorry, for 6 months, for 4.5 years, it's very much the same sort of way of processing their day-to-day operation, the way that they ran the loans, the way that Clem Orfini was the sole director, etc. But in the last 6 months, there's been several instances of changes of behaviour. So, well, corporate behaviour. So, first of all, the introduction of two other directors onto the board in Anthony Hall and Ben Griswood in October, followed by the restructure in March, and now obviously this debenture with the addition, nominally at least, of Christian Morfuni as a non-exec. I ask this because we very rarely now have the opportunity to ask these things directly. Certainly the most recent attempts that any print medium in Swindon have had to ask the club directly about some of these most recent events have gone unanswered. So I just want to ask, because you have had more access and therefore you've had these consultations, right? Has the club given any indication of why they've pivoted in this direction over the last 6 months? And in your conversations, have you managed to achieve any sort of clarity as to what they're attempting to do as an overall goal with these various changes to corporate behaviour?
That's quite a question. And I can only give you my impressions rather than say kind of verbatim what the club have said to us. I think the simple answer is, when we've asked a similar question, we've been told it's good governance. And I think if you kind of take that at face value, it is good governance. If these things had been put in place from the very start of Clem Morfuni's ownership of Swindon Town Football Club, I don't think anybody would have batted an eyelid. I think it's good practice to have more than one director on the company board. I think it's right that you try and simplify ownership structures. I should say that within the trust, we have really strong legal advice on a pro bono basis from one of London's leading partners in company law. And there's at least 2 or 3 of us who sit on the trust board who have more years than I care to mention experience in operating companies at a pretty senior level. So when we're talking about this kind of stuff, it is things that we can relate to. The restructuring of companies does happen. Change in the share ownership does happen. I think what isn't clear, and it goes to the heart of your question, Sam, is why now? Because if anything, the situation has improved in terms of a governance perspective, because Clem is now reportedly holding 100% of the club shares. He owns 100% of the company, which is lending money into the club. So I can't answer the question, why now? It's a question that we've thought about, we've asked, and other than it's good governance and it's good legal advice, which is difficult to argue with, the only element we can argue about, or not even argue about, is kind of challenge and ask, is why now? The timing is odd, and it does feel a little bit, dare I say, arse about face, that when there were minority shareholders as part of the wider jigsaw puzzle, and you're loaning money into a company that you don't own 100% of, then there's a far stronger argument to have maybe something more stronger than just a director loan to protect the investment that you're putting in, because you don't own 100% of that company. But now that Clem Mulfooney does own 100% of the company, why would you then do that? And good governance only answers that to a certain level. There's still uncertainty and questions as to why now. So we continue to engage with the club. As I say, Anthony gave up an hour and a half of his morning before a game on Monday. We continue to engage formally and informally. And as far as I can tell, that will continue. And we'll continue to chip away to get a broader understanding of the direction of travel and what this new governance can achieve and bring about.
Andrew, I guess the other part that we should ask Neil about here is what their trust perspective and position is with the ongoing matters in Australia. And given that you actually stayed up through the night the other day to listen to the hearing down under, I think maybe you're in the better position to discuss with Neil.
Yeah, I don't know what sort of moves perhaps the trust in the terms of the, you know, when I was watching the fact that payments to or involving Swindon Town were part of that hearing, albeit not a hugely significant part, does that perhaps kind of shape the trust's reflections on how this case down under is looking that we talked about last week?
It's something that we've been tracking for a while. I mean, the liquidation case and the hearings they're having around it aren't new. For those who are maybe scratching their heads a little about what this is about, it's unrelated to Swindon Town Football Club, as far as we can tell. It's an investigation into how one of the access companies that used to be owned by Clem Mulfooney then changed hands and then ultimately went into liquidation, owing money to multiple parties. So that's what's been looked at by the Australian authorities. It's probably been going on for maybe a year now through various hearings and various things that they've done over there. We've been tracking it quietly in the background. We are interested purely from the fact that it involves the guy who now owns 100% of Swindon Town Football Club. At advisory boards over the last 6 months, there have been questions posed by supporters as to any relevance and any connection, and the club have gone some lengths to say, no, this is a standalone issue, unrelated to Swindon Town Football Club. There's no link between any of this and the day-to-day operation of the club. Andrew, you sat in and listened to some of the hearing on Monday night, and it's been reported that there is reference to payments from parts of the Access Group to the football club and back again. Is that a fair reflection of what you heard? Because we've not seen any transcripts. We're not able to kind of talk openly about it because we didn't have anybody there. But I understand that may have been discussed.
Yeah, that was, like I said, I think the perspective on it is that the liquidator is spending a lot of time asking Clem Mulfooney about a lot of payments across his various companies and former companies and when they were made and so on. So, but there was definite reference to money at one stage being, you know, going into and out of Swindon Town Football Club, and the liquidator did kind of discuss his ownership of the club with him, albeit briefly. So, you know, it has kind of surfaced in that much broader case.
And I think another layer to all of this, because like many things like that we talk about with Swindon Town, there's always multiple layers. You peel back one layer and you find something else. The introduction of a debenture now between the club and a non-football ownership element of Clem Mulfooney's Access Group then muddies the water again. And there may be no connection whatsoever between these hearings and Swindon Town Football Club. And the club have again stressed that, Anthony Hall stressed that to me again on Monday morning. That may be absolutely 100% true. But as soon as you then build a bridge between Swindon Town Football Club and another part of the Access Group, you're then creating an opportunity for more concern and more questions and more challenge as to why there is that link. So we don't have anything in front of us or any evidence or anything that, as a trust, we are looking at the Australian case and going, oh, we could be in trouble here. We've got to be very clear and honest there. We're tracking it, but we're not aware of anything directly or specific linking the liquidation proceedings to potential problems down the line. But the debenture does muddy the water. So we'll continue to track it. Every time we talk about it with the club continue to stress there is nothing to there's nothing to see here, that there is no concern. You shouldn't be worried about it. These things happen in big corporate life, that people get sued and countersued and all this other stuff, which is fine, so long as it stays away from the club. We've asked for a copy of the transcripts so that we can be sure exactly the context of some of the things that have been reported and said. We'll continue to keep an eye on the proceedings, and through our legal advisors, they have contacts in Australia that are also helping to collect information. So we're not, it's not something at the top of our worry list. We have bigger things to get stuck into at the moment. But it is something we'll continue to keep an eye on.
Well, thank you very much, Neil, for giving us so much of your time, because I understand that being the chairman of the trust is not, in fact, a full-time position, although I presume it often feels like it.
It's one of those things. There's a lot going on at the moment. It'd be great if we could keep the focus, certainly for the next few weeks, on that football pitch, because there's, what we've got left now, is it four big cup finals left to go? So let's at least try and focus on that for the next month, and then pick up the rest of it in the close season.
And that's what we'll be doing next on Rake the Moon. Neil Hutchings, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, Sam, we got a long chat with Neil there, and we did our best to arrange our way through a few topics, and quite a lot of the minutiae of loans and ownership and structure. Was there anything that Neil said in particular that really stood out to you?
I think Neil does a very good job in not always easy circumstances negotiating a relationship with the club on multiple different levels. And it's not just him, it's the trust in general. And they get a lot of criticism a lot of the time. I think people would prefer that they were a bit more militant some of the time. Some obviously on the other side of the debate would prefer that they were more like the supporters club. And I think there's a difficult balance to be struck. And Neil and his board, who are all entirely voluntary, let's not forget, they have to be both partners in a joint venture, a proper legal arrangement that manages a professional football club stadium. And they also have to have a separate hat where they attempt to interrogate and seek clarity on matters of good governance, of finances, of basic service for fans, and to push their own members' agendas as well. So it's a really difficult hybrid role that they don't get paid for, that takes up an awful lot of their time. And I think that we should recognize that whenever we are engaging with their action or perception of a lack of action, or wherever you stand on the spectrum. That aside, I think for me, it's very interesting that Neil talks about, and it's an area that I am also unsure about, the timing of all this, particularly why a debenture needs to be registered against an asset which is 100% owned nominally by the person whose company is 100% owned, that's lending the money to the other business. It doesn't really make a great deal of sense why now. And I'm still in my head trying to justify it, though the claims of good governance and corporate structure and all that they do make sense by themselves. I still just, there has to have been a catalyst to this, because there's been very little reason for the club to make any significant changes. They've been very happy in the way that they have governed the club over the previous 4.5 years. So whilst I'm sure that legal advice will have been involved, and I absolutely agree that it is good governance in theory, what has been done from a structural perspective, I have this nagging feeling that we're just not getting the whole story. But you know, this is such an issue. Like, this is part of the complexities of being a fan, of covering the club, or also running a football club, in that it is a private commercial enterprise, and they will have sensitivities around sharing beyond what they consider to be a reasonable level, and therefore there will always be holes that can be filled with speculation. And obviously some of the actions of the past have left a bit of a hole in the trust, not in the trust SDFC, but in the trust, the bond of trust between some supporters and the club. So the timing issue is interesting for me. I think it's pretty clear that the trust do keep a keen eye on what is going on. Their chosen approach is not necessarily the sort of combative approach which some would want. But in this situation, whether or not a combative approach would achieve anything, particularly when they have to have this relationship on a professional level with the club, is up for debate. I think that they are an important access point to the club too at the moment, in being able to have these meetings with them, because they are obliged to have these meetings with them, whereas they are not obliged to meet with the media so often, or be quite as open with local media outlets. So I think that he gave a decent insight into the conversations that they've had. I think he gave a good and clear roadmap of what has happened. But like me, he and the trust are still a little bit confused by the timing of it all.
Yeah, I think I can add my own personal voice to that, as to a little bit of why now. And I do sympathise with the fact that the trust do have to do a very delicate dance, given, you know, they do have to maintain some semblance of relationship with the club, at least to make the joint ownership as effective as it might be. That's a lot of non-football, with four games to go of the season, brackets at least. And somehow Swindon find themselves very much in contention for automatic promotion all of a sudden after a four-point Easter. I think in our last episode I expressed some optimism that things might not be as difficult as Cambridge as I thought, and how completely and utterly wrong I was, bar the scoreline. First of all, Sam, so what did you make of the Abbey Stadium raid that took place?
Well, I have to be honest here, isn't it? I watched that game on record at 11:30 at night, because I've been hosting a family event that evening. So I'd have to turn all my devices off to try and watch it as live. And I can advise against trying to do that. I think I became far too distracted during said family event. What did I make of it? I thought that Swindon were third best on the night. I thought that they were so inferior that it was really quite worrying. And I think the manager has obviously subsequently gone and admitted as much, that there was a robbery there, that they thieved a point when they really had no right to thieve it. But that is the nature of this team, as we then saw again on Monday. And you were there to see it. I mean, am I being unfair? It felt like Swindon were hopelessly inferior across almost every minute of that match.
No, I think Cambridge were by far the better team. I think the first half that they put together was arguably the most complete half of football that Swindon have faced, if you like, or subjected themselves to. The truth probably lies somewhere in between the two. And they didn't really slow down that much, Cambridge, in the second half either. So I can't argue that that Joel McGregor equaliser, finally correctly attributed, which was nice, was a genuine shock, I think, for all the little bit of attacking they'd have to do. But it is curious how this works. They go away with a point there. Cambridge obviously give away another late goal on Monday, where the goalkeeper comes out and obligingly helps across into his own net, or something like that, at Cheltenham. And suddenly Neil Harris is saying, well, I wonder if anyone wants us to be promoted. Well, clearly we don't. We're not at Swindon's expense. I don't have any particular grudges against Cambridge United, just to make that very clear. How the mindsets have kind of flipped over the two games, because now I think a lot of people have said this season hasn't quite felt like a promotion season. I think not so much Cambridge, but that late win and the manner of it against Walsall has kind of perhaps engaged people a bit more than they have been during the preceding 41 matches. Excellent away support in particular, notwithstanding.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? People have been saying, probably since that Bolton game, so we're now talking about a good 4 months, they've been saying that this team hasn't played well. I just don't know. I don't think that anyone can say what playing well is for this Swindon team. That game against Bolton was clearly the anomaly in the season. But if they don't play well and they're still getting these points and they're still digging them out late on and they're still digging them out from losing positions, do we need them to play well? How important is it for them to play well if they're getting points? I don't know. I thought it was kind of functional for 45 minutes on Monday and then dysfunctional for about 20 minutes of the second half. And then Fletcher Holman woke them all up with his pace down the left and helped somewhat by some curious defending and goalkeeping again there. I thought that both the right back, who I think Swindon were interested in signing in the summer, and the goalkeeper were both at fault for the first goal. And obviously the second one is a bit of a mess all round from Walsall's perspective. But yeah, we have to talk about the fact that this team, for all its accusations of being quite fragile, is actually piling up points in difficult positions, particularly in the latter stages of the season when we think about Tranmere and Cambridge and Walsall. And while it has also happened previously elsewhere, they've really been doing the business when they've needed to. I know they had that blip. There was a 2-3 week period where nothing was going right and it did feel a bit hollow. But there's something about them, and there was something about them in 2025 as well. Holloway has, whether it's through stamina or motivation or just throwing on as many attacking options as he possibly can, has managed to change games late on. It makes it quite a difficult watch at times, and it's not for the faint-hearted at Swindon this year. There's not been many games where you could sit back and go, oh, we'll just relax and watch them win comfortably. You know, even wins which ended up being quite comfortable, like the Barrow game at home or the Harrogate game at home, still started off with them falling behind. So it's been a difficult watch, but maybe a difficult watch makes an even more enjoyable ending if it does go the way that we all hope.
Yes, yeah, no, they I always sometimes think that, you know, managers saying, well, we kept going, it in some senses it feels like the bare minimum, but I don't think that applies to this team. I think it's like a bit more, isn't it, when well, Liverpool stopped trying, I suppose. So maybe it is easier to do than sometimes I give it credit for. But there is a kind of certain persistence about them that, as you say, has really been there for 18 months or so. And you can flip the performances on its head. But since they lost at home to MK Dons, and that really put them behind the kind of eight ball a bit, they've gone 11 points out of 15. And there's three away games in there, and the two home games. So yeah, and now everyone else around them suddenly appears to have a little bit of heebie-jeebies, though Bromley, again, are stumbling towards their ultimate goal. So, yeah, you're right. It's such a strange division. It does feel a little kind of pocket of the way football is played there is a bit different almost from the rest of the league, as you've seen against the League One sides. And just getting the ball in both boxes appears to account for an awful lot, but you can't help but kind of on Monday in particular admire the will of them just to kind of plough on and find a way through and force a substitute to issue a public apology for their performance, which doesn't happen very often. Which I think Vincent Harper, who was guilty for that first goal, actually did. Said no. So you have to force that luck sometimes, I suppose.
I mean, he says he's guilty, but ultimately Holman's just beaten him in a foot race, having given him a length's head start. I mean, if you're just naturally quicker and you react quicker, sometimes you've got to give credit to the attacker there. And Holman has been seriously good off the bench. And I know that the people will continue to say, well, that justifies a start. But if he's going to have as much impact as he has as a substitute, why would you start him? He continues to make so many good contributions when he comes on between 50, 60 minutes. I think it must be half a dozen, maybe as many as eight games that he's been involved in serious definitive contributions having come off the bench. And that's just since he arrived in January. get triggering that contract extension, boys, because he's going to be in demand this summer.
Yeah, so just looking here, 4 of his 5 goals have come from, you know, off the bench. The winner on Monday, making the game safe against Gillingham, coming on again, really, sort of turning things around against Newport, 1 at Oldham. The only goal he's got when he started was his first one at Bromley, which was right at the start of the game. So yeah, I can understand the urge for him to start, but you do kind of chuck him on for half an hour there, and things just seem to occur. He's a little bit sort of a force of nature, I think.
Yeah, he won the penalty at Harrogate as well later on. There is a lot about him to like. And not only that, he is one of only a handful of these players who have managed to make a connection with the supporters this season. I think him and Connor Ripley are the two that the fans have really taken to, and it's part because both are willing to give it back. I think Connor is a bit of an exception because he's played every game, and therefore the fans have been able to create a bond with him, and he stands in front of them for long periods. So it's a bit different with the rest of them. So many of them have come in and out of the team that it's quite hard to create that sense of a bond. But for whatever reason, Holman plays up to it. He enjoys it and the fans enjoy him. And there's just been so much joy in watching him over the course of the last 3 months or so. I really hope we get a full season watching him next year.
Yep, fingers crossed. So 4 games left. Colchester it is next on a Friday of all things, but it does give Swindon a chance to apply that sort of psychological pressure that I've been talking about that seems to be getting to Neil Harris a little bit, if no one else. So it's all mind games and somehow willing yourself perhaps over the line as much as playing beautiful quality football, I think.
Well, it's a massive, massive 24 hours, isn't it? And Swindon do have that opportunity to jump into second on Friday night, and then the two below them play each other, and MK Dons play Bromley. And it's an opportunity here, potentially, for Swindon to end up with, after the weekend, with automatic promotion in their own hands. Because, and I think my maths is right here, is that if 2 of MK Dons, Cambridge and Notts County, fail to win over the weekend, and Swindon do, then Swindon win their remaining 3 games after that, and they're up automatically.
So, yeah, if you just got a couple of draws between, well, or I think you probably want a Bromley win at this stage, and if Cambridge and Notts County can tear a sort of lump out of each other, then yeah, all of a sudden you have steered yourself into a position where you could maybe get 3 more wins. But it's a lot to finish a season with 5 wins in a row. I know I did it, but
they've done it twice this season already, haven't they? There's no reason why they can't do it again. I know the games are difficult. We have to allow hope into our lives from a time to time following Swindon Town.
If you sometimes can't follow, we have to allow it into this podcast, let alone into our lives overall.
I think it's really important. You know, the sun is shining, summer is coming. Why not, at least for another 3 or 4 days, hold out some hope and some belief that we can get out of this godforsaken division?
Yeah, after 42 games worth, there still, people, is a chance. And on that note, we shall conclude this week's Regular Moon. Thank you very much for listening. A reminder, if you want more of Sam's journalism and insight, do subscribe to The Moonraker for the very reasonable price of £5, I believe it is, a month, or you can further discount that by £50 for a annual subscription to get Sam's lowdown and insights on all matters Swindon Town, and give me some moral support at press conferences. So why wouldn't you want to do that? But we'll see you next week.